Please be sure to submit those documents.
They will. All right.
Thank you, everybody, for your patience on that last item. I didn't realize that it was going to be as lengthy as it was, but I appreciate the dialogue. We are going to go now back to item number one and hear from Mr. Hankin, who has sat very patiently and waited to present this item to us.
Presentation by the Public Policy Forum discussing their July 2012 report, Milwaukee County Juvenile Recidivism, Metrics and Trends. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Hankin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for having us before you. Seated to my right is Vanessa Allen, researcher at the Public Policy Forum. I am Rob Hankin, the president of the Public Policy Forum. If you will indulge me for 20 seconds, just one comment on your previous conversation. As a co-author of the HSRI report and one who pored very carefully over every word in that report, I would be more than happy to come before the committee at a future time to represent what that report said. It is a very meaty 250-page report, and it is somewhat troublesome to me that anyone can take a certain section and say, hey, we're following HSRI, or take that same section and say, hey, we're not. And so, and it's a very conceptual report. So just wanted to let you know that if indeed at your next meeting you are going to revisit that, I would be more than happy, either in a formal setting or an informal setting, for any of the new supervisors to discuss what was in that report.
Thank you, Mr. Hankin. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right.
So, on agenda item number one, the research brief that the Public Policy Forum released in July of this past year is actually a sequel to a different research brief that we presented submitted and published in June of 2011. That research brief is shown on this slide, and what it was an overall sort of scope of the detention population in Milwaukee County. We had certainly noticed, as had you and policymakers at the county, that detention populations were declining. That refers to both the adult population in the what were formerly known as the county jail and the county house of correction, as well as the population in the juvenile detention center out at the children's court complex, as well as in the number of delinquent youth that were being sent from Milwaukee County to the state-run juvenile correction institutions. So we thought it was very important to actually put some numbers behind that. We had all seen it happening, but to what extent, really, how had it happened? So Ms. Allen and I put together the data. We documented the nature and the scope of the declines in both the adult and the juvenile populations. And then we made a few very fundamental points. Number one was, we can't tell you why this is happening. We all think we sort of know why it's happening. Many different reasons. Could have been the economy. Could have obviously been some of the very successful alternatives programming or programming that at least we think and we feel intuitively is successful that had been implemented at both the adult and the juvenile level. But our point was, it's very important now that we're seeing these declines. We also documented in this research brief the tremendous fiscal savings that the county was generating as a result of these very promising trends. It was very important to try to establish what was the causal relationship between the declines in the population and these very substantial benefits that the county was receiving. One of our concerns was that if this was just cyclical, due to the economy, for example, and these populations started to go back up, well, that was obviously going to mean some big trouble for an already troubled county, in that these savings were instrumental, indeed, in redirecting resources to the Behavioral Health Division, just as an example. So our point was that it was very important to try to determine precisely why this was occurring. And to the extent that these declines were, in fact, tied to good things that you at the county were doing, to also take a careful look at whether you should be reinvesting some of these savings so that you could continue to do these good things and maybe enhance these good things and generate even additional savings. So that was our message in June of 2011. We did present that report to the Judiciary Committee. It was more of a Judiciary Committee item at the time. Fast forward to roughly 6 months later. We were asked by your Delinquency in Court Services Division. Mr. Moe was the division director at the time, but Mr. Cologne was, I think, just coming in and was supportive of this. I want to commend the division, because the division said, you know what, you're right. We need to understand this better. We think that we are collecting a lot of valuable data and information. We think we do have a story to tell about the effectiveness of our programming on these declining populations. But if we go out and say it, well, people aren't going to believe us. They're going to think we're touting ourselves and blowing our own horn. So the Delinquency and Court Services Division, I think, very commendedly asked if the Public Policy Forum would come in as an independent third party to take a look at some of this data and to give a third party independent evaluation of what's happening and can we establish some of those causal relationships. And are there ways in which perhaps the division ought to be improving the way it's collecting and disseminating its data? Again, I want to underscore, that's not an easy thing for a department to do, to ask an outside party to come in and review, and it was very commendable that they did so. So we did that. We worked on this project for roughly 4 to 5 months. We worked very closely with Mr. Moe at the time, with Mr. Wanta, with Ms. Naples, who are in the audience. We thank them very much for their cooperation and for their patience. The key questions that we sought to answer are on this slide. What is the impact of juvenile justice system programs on juvenile outcomes? How does the division currently evaluate whether it's successful? What are the strengths and limitations of the division's current method of measuring what we all seem to feel is sort of the most prominent outcome measure when it comes to this topic, which is recidivism? And what steps might DCSD take to further improve system evaluation? So we have a few more slides to go through that describe the report. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Allen to do so.
Okay, as you guys all know, there are a lot of resources dedicated to the juvenile justice system, from the police department, who initially refers a youth to DCSD, to DCSD intake, district attorneys who make the decisions on how a case should proceed, the courts that hear the cases, DCSD community-based programming, and when the county contracts with the state to house their more severe offenders. If you look at the graph shown there, it depicts a sample of referrals by initial disposition. And you can see that when looking at all referrals, most referrals go into the county's probation under DCSD. And if you, the blue section of the bars, that's initial referral, their first referral. So if somebody is first referred to the juvenile justice system, there's an equally likely chance that they'll be put in their deferred prosecution, on a deferred prosecution agreement or probation. And a deferred prosecution agreement, for those who might not know fully, is an agreement that the district attorney will allow certain youth in order to divert them away from court. So as long as they stay out of trouble and abide by certain programs, partake in certain programs, they won't have any charges against them, and they'll avoid any further involvement with the courts. And we see that evaluation is important, because not only you want to put resources where they're best used that have good impacts, but it identifies areas deserving further investment, those areas in need of improvement, and then the more cost-effective programs. For example, the first-time offender program roughly costs $2,000 to serve one youth, where the wraparound program, which serves a significant portion of youth under DCSD supervision, costs about $16,000. So these are programs that are seen as very good, but you want to make sure that, say, the first-time offender program, is it being used to the capacity that the county has? Could more individuals be diverted into that program? So those are reasons why evaluation is necessary. If you could skip to the next one. And so I'll begin with just defining recidivism. Generally, recidivism refers to the occurrence of an offense by an individual already known to have committed a previous offense. Within that general definition, there are many definitions that
that are seen all over the nation. And the Council for Juvenile Correctional Administrators actually conducted a survey of juvenile justice agencies and looked at some published research evaluations. And you can see in this graph the results of that survey and the look at the research evaluations. And the most common definition of recidivism is rearrest or repetition to court. And within the definition also includes a span of time in which youth are observed. So in the survey, it seems that correctional or juvenile justice agencies look at a 2-year time frame. So when a youth is first referred until 2 years out, what their recidivism rate was. There is no national juvenile recidivism benchmark for various reasons. The juvenile jurisdiction in Wisconsin, it's 17 years old. In other states, it might be a different age. And also, these evaluations, some of them, they stop when the juvenile court system. So when a youth, say in Wisconsin, turns 17, that's when recidivism evaluations end. They don't go into the adult system and see how those youth have fared in the adult system. So because there's no national benchmark, many evaluations sort of measure themselves year to year, so progress year to year. Year to year evaluations aren't perfect either because the economy can contribute to some of these fluctuations, but it's important for evaluations to really look at if there's a big policy change or big substantial investment in a program, whether or not the change in recidivism is due to that policy or program change. If you can go back. With the program-specific evaluations, there are several conducted within Milwaukee County, and the evaluations are most often conducted as a reporting requirement for various funding sources, though they're often used for internal evaluation as well as updating key stakeholders as to program performance. The comparisons between the evaluations, the program-specific evaluations, there's inherent differences between programs. Like the first-time offender program serves lower-level populations or lower-level offenders, and say the targeted monitoring program serves more chronic offenders. So comparing evaluations doesn't always make sense for inherent differences, but also the evaluations that are currently done are not always the same. They use different definitions as far as recidivism, track offenders for different lengths of time. So for that reason as well, it's hard to compare program-specific evaluations. But DCSD looks at recidivism, a broader, the whole entire system, and looks at recidivism of all juvenile offenders, regardless of dispositional or programmatic placement. So it looks at the whole system, the system being a set of services and policies that the county and the state have decided upon. So the data sets in which DCSD has currently looked at recidivism, the data set only includes data on reoffense patterns, where there are other data depositories where there's information on the services actually being provided to youth. So we have, in our report, suggested that maybe there should be a more comprehensive data depository where it's not just reoffense patterns that are collected and kept together, but also the services that each youth is getting so that you really understand, okay, this youth has this recidivism level, and these are the services that they went through, not just one program and their experience in one program, but the collective, what happened before they came into this program, what happened after. And there are some initiatives currently going on. There's an IDEAS initiative. It's called the Integrated Data Evaluation and Action System Systems, and it's an initiative of many different government agencies, MPS included, and whether or not it makes sense to combine these different data sets, how well it could help in different evaluations. And then also the Community Justice Council of Milwaukee County has also seen benefits in sort of talking about how to combine their data, and GCSD, the juvenile justice system, should be a part of that. Recidivism as an evaluative tool, it will likely to continue to be the most important evaluation measure, and because of that, it's important for all justice systems, including DCSD, to make sure that they're using the best definition to explain their program performance, their system's performance. Go ahead, move forward. Just to give you a description of the population that is currently served in the juvenile justice system, there are approximately 2,171 new referrals in 2010, this data is coming from. This is a 39% decline from 2006. And those referrals, 1,694 youth were responsible for those roughly 2,000 referrals. And that's a 36% decline, roughly similar. Every year, large numbers of youth that have been referred to DCSD turn 17 years of age and age out of the juvenile justice system. In 2010, 1,517 youth. The graph depicted here, it shows, so we'll take the turquoise bars, for example. That's a 2010 cohort of aged out youth. So everybody that aged out in 2010 are seen in the turquoise bars, but even though they aged out in 2010, they were referred in different years, and you can tell by the series of bars. So as early as, I think, age 7 is 2001. So some of them were referred at age 7. It's most often the case that they're referred in the 14, 15-year age group. Go ahead. So DCSD uses the aged out definition for their sample. So they look at aged out youth in a given year. How often were they referred to the juvenile justice system at any point under the juvenile jurisdiction? It's essentially a look back. So if you age out in 2010, this is the number of referrals that you've had to the juvenile justice system. And they mainly track three statistics, the overall recidivism, the change in multiple repeat offenders, meaning two or more subsequent referrals, and then chronic offenders, those that have four or more subsequent referrals. And you can see by the second line that recidivism, overall recidivism has stayed roughly at 41%. And then multiple repeat offenders seem to have declined over the years, and chronic offenders are a small percentage and have seen a slight decline. But the limitations of this method is that because you're looking back, so you age out in 2010, and you might have had 5 years under the juvenile justice system since your first referral, but you might have only had two. This method doesn't control for that. It gives people different opportunities to reoffend. And then also, when you're looking at 2010, if you age out in 2010, the youth within that 2010 cohort were referred in different years. So this misses how policy and programs have impacted a referral that took place in 2007, for example. You can't see that within this recidivism measure. So we look at a different alternative. And instead of looking at the year in which a youth ages out of the system, we look at the year of first referral. And this, looking at the year of first referral is a commonly used method nationally. It's very typical. And in this case, the data that we've had, we can only look at 14 and a half to 15-year-olds. We look at from their first referral to 2 to 2.5 years out. We report the same rates, but we report the same statistics, but we find different numbers. So we find a higher recidivism rate. In 2010, it was roughly 46%. There was a high in 2005 of 49%, but it's declined in the 3 years following. And then with multiple repeat offenders, where DCSD's method sort of saw a decline in multiple repeat offenders, we see it roughly stay the same. And then with chronic offenders, we find the same, that a small portion of youth are contributing to a significant portion of the referrals, but it's a smaller proportion of juveniles that are responsible for over half of repeat referrals. So these are the conclusions that we list in our report, and I'll read them here. It may be helpful for DCSD to pursue a more comprehensive data collection approach in which programs, service levels, and reoffense patterns are collected and tracked centrally. The current recidivism evaluations can be improved to focus on youth referred in a given year rather than those youth that have aged out in a given year, and a control for a uniform observation period. Using our alternative method, as I said, we find lower rates of recidivism for youth first referred in 2007 and 2008 than in the prior 3 years. Although 2 years of improved outcomes do not guarantee a new trend, this positive improvement begs further research into whether changes made in policy or programs during the time could be the cause. Under either measure of recidivism, we find a small group of chronic offenders account for a significant portion of repeat offenses. This is seen nationally. Consequently, increased attention to programs and strategies aimed at chronic offenders may be warranted. And then we end, it may be appropriate for DCSD, along with other justice system officials, to carefully contemplate which recidivism definition or set of definitions would best achieve performance assessment goals in the future.
If you have any questions. So to summarize at a very high level, the recidivism methodology that is currently being employed by the division makes sense for them from many different perspectives, from in particular from an administrative perspective. What we were really trying to hone in on, if you need to really say to your policymakers, try to describe the impacts that different policy measures are having on recidivism, then using this alternative approach would be a better way to monitor that and to be able to explain that. And so, and again, what we see when we do that is a suggestion that indeed things are improving. So the question then becomes, now we need to go and drill down and see whether did you put more money into a certain set of programs in calendar year 2008 that maybe had an impact on that improvement. And so that's what we were really after here.
Okay. And how would you go about changing? There's no guidelines on the national level. How would you go about changing that or setting levels?
Yeah, well, see, that's that's an issue nationally, because one of the questions you will always ask is, well, how do we compare to Hennepin County, or how do we
right.
compare to Cody in Ohio? And if they are defining recidivism differently, if they're counting a recidivistic event as when a rearrest occurs
right.
as opposed to when a judicial process occurs and there's a sentencing, that's
right.
you're going to... So we don't know how to address that. I mean, there is, nationally, there is an effort being made to try to convince localities to develop a common definition. But as Vanessa just mentioned, the CJC is on this issue, and as part of their reinvestment initiative and their metric-based new initiative, trying to come up with at least a common recidivism definition for all Milwaukee County justice programs, I think would be a good starting
right.
point.
I also remember having this conversation, and in regards to what the system looks at as being successes in regards to recidivism. So if someone dies, that's a success because they're not going to go back to jail. If they're a juvenile and they offend and they get charged with an adult crime, that's a success because they're not going back to the juvenile
right.
system.
Yes.
So a little bit of tweaking
yes.
needs to be done with that as well. Council. You've given us a lot to think about. Supervisor Stemper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're exactly right. But how do you age out the program if you are able to, if you're old enough to get in the program?
Well,
when I was in, the first time I was in the Friends program, if you're 17 and you enter the program, you have 6 months to follow the community involvement. So you don't age out unless you are, you don't get into the program unless you're eligible by age.
You don't get into the program if you're 17 because you're considered an adult. But if you're in the program at 16 and turn 17, it's still, you're in the juvenile system and you were adjudicated as a juvenile.
Right.
But you age out of the system, I mean, by that, the sheer fact that you're 17. So once you turn 17, or, so if you're first referred at 15, you age out at 17, we only consider you being under the juvenile justice system since first referral for 2 years. If you turn 17, then you're now in the adult system, and it's not tracked in the two recidivism measures that we have here.
Right, so if you're eligible to get in the program, you're in the program.
Yes.
If you're 15 and you reoffend, that's it's unsuccessful. But if you don't reoffend and you turn 17, and then you're successful. But if you commit an offense when you're 17, then you're not tracked.
Right, that's a problem. And if the CJC is working
really
on
no
combining data, it might be advantageous for the reoffense patterns within the juvenile system to be matched up with the adult system. But it takes resources, staff time, and a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to do it, but they're just limited on resources.
So they changed the age where you can enter the program at for the first time you want to finish program?
Oh, I'm not sure. That would be
you could be 17, right, Tom?
Yeah. No, that's 17.
No, 17
no,
is an adult.
If you grow at 17, you're considered it's an adult charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're under the age of 17, you're arrested. It's the state of the petition that sets it. If you're arrested at 16 and the DA does not issue a petition until you're 17, you cannot issue a juvenile petition and have to issue an adult charge.
So you're not eligible for a deferred agreement when you are 17?
No.
No.
You go to the adult system.
Mm-hmm.
And that 17 is a good number for Milwaukee County. We've had this argument with the state on several occasions because the state obviously would like us to bump that up to 18 because then it saves them money, but it saves us money staying at 17.
Right.
So
and
we like the 17.
I should add that the adult system also has diversions.
Right.
So you're just now you're eligible for a different sort of deferred prosecution.
And I think that's how this affects Milwaukee County as well, is that it'd be nice for us to be able to track what happens to our youth. Because right now we're making grand overtures as a county to keep our youth here in our county. And to treat them, you know, within their community, to get the families involved, to do things like wraparound and other programs, some phenomenal programs that we have. And then, you know, sometimes things happen, and in the newspaper they're like, oh, these youth, and they were in the system, and right away somehow Milwaukee County becomes involved. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice for us to be able to say that child wasn't in our system, that child we sent to the state system, or, you know, that child was our child, and this is what happened with that.
Yeah, and another hard thing to track is if a youth gets in a program in 2008, you count that youth for 2008 report. But if their program goes into 2009, then they're successful in 2009. So that there was no way you can accurately count those statistics, at least when I used to get those reports. Because a youth can come to the program in 1 year, but end up in another year. But what year do you count him?
But there are ways to get at those and sort of smooth it over and actually get some pretty accurate recidivism rates. So you just have to put your mind to the definition.
Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor
Stemper? Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Well, I mean, if you repeat, it's a recidivism. Period. If you don't, you're successful. No, that's it. But I was just talking about in regards to reporting. Well, these many kids were
reported. And that's part of the problem is because for some of us sitting at the table, recidivism means that you actually went back and you were in the system. Mm-hmm. But for some of us, recidivism is, you know, if you went back to court, if you got to court, if you got put in a diversion program and done that more than once, that's recidivism. Mm-hmm. So I think that herein lies the reason why we needed this report this morning, is to get our minds thinking on, for some of us who are headed to the state, how do we, as you know, how do we grapple with this issue as a county, because it does affect us. And wouldn't it be nice if we're applying for grants and things like that as a juvenile correctional system here in Milwaukee County, be able to say our recidivism rate is this. But again, if you're doing that on a national level, there are no national benchmarks for recidivism, right. And so or everybody's are different at the current standing. So you say, what do you do? The same thing happened when we had the discussion about closing youth facilities at the state level. You know, we didn't have any hard and fast numbers to be able to do that. A couple ventures, we didn't even know how many kids, you know, were coming from where within the state. And so it was that argument took, what, 15 years? 20? You know, and we finally were able to grapple with it. But for you going to be state elected, you know, this is an issue. Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question pertains to that 17 age number. Does that restrict us from tracking beyond the age of 17? Is it because of that number that stops us from tracking, or because of we can't devote resources to track beyond 17?
Once the 17-year-old leaves the juvenile justice system and there's limited capacity for your delinquency and court services division to keep track of that individual and what's occurring. Now, again, potentially that person is then in the adult system, so there's a separate database over there that may be able to do it. So I think that's a question for your community justice council to grapple with, because, again, what this is all about is being able to say to your constituents, here's where we want to invest our resources, and in order to be able to do that, you do need some better data collection strategies.
And does the state do tracking as well? Let's just say in that age range, let's say at 17, 18, 19, they track them after they come in contact with their system as well?
Certain evaluations do. But at the state level, there's a... they track information about those that are in their juvenile correctional institutions, and not so much all of the data for those that are within the county program. So yes, they track for youth in their facilities.
So maybe it's not we could build a bridge where we could have access to their data as well.
Yes. And I should give GCSC credit for both. They're acting on this. They're looking at the alternative. And also they have, Michelle Nafel specifically, has contacted the CJC and tried to understand what efforts are being made and looking at compiling data and measuring recidivism.
Thank you.
All right. Any other comments or questions on this? Thank you very much. You've given us a lot to think about. All right.